Some random person on TikTok did.
This has nothing to do with this week's topic. But if you take away anything from this episode, it's you should watch Bluey.
I don't know if that's the takeaway, but I think they should take away where to find this podcast.
There you go. You can find this podcast everywhere that you can find podcasts, you know, under a rock, in a sock, under your bed, in your head. You can also find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on YouTube, which you should also consider liking, commenting, and subscribing to this YouTube channel because it does support us. And, I mean, how else am I going to be able to afford Disney Plus so that I can watch more Bluey? So, and,
I mean, that's cool, but it also helps defeat the evil algorithm overlords.
I mean, that too, if you wanted to get technical, but is this even usable?
I'm going to cobble this together and it's going to be great. We're just out here vibing. We're having fun.
It's just texture. It's texture.
Yeah. Texture for the episode.
Texture for the episode.
So this week's topic is one that I thought would be kind of interesting because we're both kind of going through this right now. And that is how to edit your decks, because it's either something you think way too much about or it's something that we don't think enough about. So I think it's relevant and interesting to talk about.
I'm kind of glad that you brought this up specifically because I think it was at 2:30 in the morning I sent you a message being like, hey, can you give me your opinion on how to change Zabandrel? Because I was like, I need this.
It's the Magic player equivalent of texting you up.
Can you look at my deck list, bro? Yeah. I know it's 2:30, but can you give it a little look-see, please? I would really appreciate it.
So this kind of begs the question. Why would you edit your decks? Like, isn't a deck just like done when you finish building it? Is it ever finished? Like, it just opens up this whole big can of worms. And I think that's why a lot of people don't approach it.
Yeah. And I used to think that decks are finished. And I don't think that anymore. But I think that's just come with time. You know, I think around like year two for me, I was like, yeah, deck's done. But like every now and then a set will drop that kind of gives you something new and exciting that, you know, could go into it. So like, I think there's always a possibility for a deck to change. Like, for instance, like my Locust God deck, I thought it was done. Even now, I still think it's kind of done. But like Ovika just got previewed. Not even previewed, released. Time is weird. But I'm like, I kind of think Ovika would be kind of good in here because it's like a pseudo second Locust God almost that I kind of appreciate.
I'm guilty of like editing the decks that I really, really, really care about. And then those decks that are like kind of on the fence and like kind of maybe gonna get taken apart at some point. If I start editing them, then I'm gonna start liking this deck. And I'm looking for a reason to not like it. Like, this is like a super messy breakup or just like that clingy ex. And I think for me, editing decks is kind of like that, where I just get emotionally reinvested in something that I don't want to get emotionally reinvested into. So I'll like maybe change a card just to like toss him a bone. But that's it, really. Like once a deck that I don't actively feel extremely invested into is done, that deck is like a time capsule of my deck brewing at the time.
I weirdly feel that way with my Alabu deck because I like the deck, but like I don't reach for it often, but I feel like there are good pieces that are constantly being released for it. And even then, I just got that new WPN, you know, exclusive secret lair that you could buy at your card shop, and it came with an Ugin the Ineffable, which I actually run in that deck. And I'm like, ooh, I could put in this prettier version of it. But then I'm like, if I put in this prettier version, that means I'm going to be reinvested in it because I'm going to want to see the pretty version again. And I kind of feel weird about this deck, but I like it, but I don't. And it's kind of like this weird, I don't like the terminology you use, but it is kind of like a weird, like, I shouldn't text him.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. I texted him at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's like, you up? For me, editing a deck is the continuation of something I really enjoy. Kind of like you said, like you want to invest your time and energy into seeing it grow and change. But also editing a deck because maybe things didn't work out for you, or maybe it worked one way in your head, but it didn't translate that exact same way physically. Or maybe you just didn't like the concept that you went with, or maybe it worked too well and you're like, oh my God, I need to kind of take my foot off the gas a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's slow my roll here. There's a lot of ways and reasons as to edit your decks.
We can tie this back into last week's episode with the with the good stuff dilemma. I was talking to someone this week and they're like, I really want to switch up my Tiamat deck because like it just feel like it's too consistent. I'm like, yeah, because you have a 7-mana tutor 5 dragons into your hand in the command zone. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what dragon are you tutoring for every single time? And he's like, oh, you know, like this or that. And it's like, build that as the commander instead.
Yeah.
If you just if you find yourself doing a particular thing often enough, curb your deck. Make the changes to the vibe to match the vibe that you're going for anyways.
You're literally cutting out the middleman in that situation.
Exactly. I feel like that's a big thing that I do when I'm actually making changes is I'm getting back to the roots of my original concept, or I'm getting back to the roots of that thing that I wanted to do in the first place.
Yeah.
And whether that's, you know, things got too busy, things got too convoluted, like you said, that was too powerful. Sometimes I'll even have to make changes because I wanted the deck to be more powerful and it wasn't powerful enough.
Yeah. I mean, I have two examples of that myself. Like, remember when we talked about my Sisse deck, how I took out that Elspeth because it gave Sisse that unnatural bump to allow me to tutor things for like a Chroma Angel of Wrath or Gisela, which was obscene. And it just kind of made the deck too easy for me to play, but it also made me feel like it was unplayable for my opponents to play against. Like, it just felt unfair. But like, on the other hand, you have my Zipandril deck, which we talked about in last week's Mono Green episode. What? Anyway, where the deck just feels sluggish. It feels slow and kind of lethargic, and I need to get a little bit more gas on the fire here. So I'm actually currently in the process of trying to make that a little bit better for my needs.
And by currently in the process, they mean like literally 10 minutes before we started recording, they had cards sprawled on their desk.
Yeah. They're right here. I wanted to get it. We were talking about it. It felt like a good time. And then I can reference the cards as we talk. It's like visual aids.
It's true. That deck of yours is an example of like wanting to go nuclear from the get-go, realizing, oh no, this is a terrible idea. I like it, but it's not the vibe that I'm going for. So it necessitates changes.
It does because I texted you specifically and I was like, how can I make this better? Because like you're my mono green guru, all right? And
I don't even have a mono green deck. I just like
you like green. So I trust you. But you told me, you said, I don't remember the specific wording, but you said, if you want this deck to be a Primal Surge deck, it's going to be hard if you don't run combos. I can give you a couple combos if you want. And I said, no, I don't want that because I don't want this to be like a combo deck. I want this to be like a pure mono green deck. And so I had to make that hard decision of like, do I completely change the concept that I was originally going for? Or do I kind of fall into sort of this area that I didn't want to do originally at all just to achieve this one cool card? It just kind of felt weird for me.
What's the movie quote? I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the heart to do it.
The strength. What is that from? Batman?
Tell us in the comment section. Yeah, I don't know.
That would be great. Please tell
me. that's exactly like the internal dilemma that you're going through right now. It's like,
yes.
So I think after that, I said, if you don't want this to be a Primal Surge deck, I can tell you like 16 cuts that you can make right now, no questions asked, and you will be fine.
Yeah. And
I don't know if I listed them out, but I could have listed them out then and there to a T.
You said, can you look at my Mirim deck? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll look at it for you.
Change the subject. I need to buy time to like actually put this list together. I was just trying to act cool in the moment.
But like it's kind of like a weird thing, like especially when, you know, I did the fail. By the way, don't do what I did. Don't buy cards before you play test.
Try before you buy. Go for a test drive.
Moxfield has a play test function for a reason.
Yeah. They always let you test drive the car before you buy it if you want.
Yeah. And I didn't do that. So now I have to cut cards that I spent a little bit of money on. Granted, it's not too much, so it doesn't hurt.
That and much. You got good cards, so they'll find a home somewhere else.
Exactly.
They can just go into your cards you own deck.
There you go, which I also am working on, although I don't think I need any cuts for that, because that deck weirdly is good.
This gets into this idea that I like to call pain points for a deck. Like just feelings or thoughts that kind of just put a little thorn in your side or like give you like the bad brain tingles.
Mm-hmm.
Just things that provoke thoughts in deck building, editing decks. You're stalling up because you don't have enough draw, or you don't have enough ramp because you put in a lot of eight drops and not a lot of ways to get to those eight drops.
Yes.
You don't have enough removal. You struggle to actually close out the game, which I find is a very common thing with a lot of commander deck building trends is people build a deck and they like they do stuff. They spin wheels, but they don't actually have a way to win the game because of the common sentiment of, oh, the commander's not about winning. Well, it's still a game. Someone has to win eventually.
I have personally...
You do need a win condition.
You do, and I've fallen for that trap many a time on my deck building stream. I'll literally be at the very final, like, 100th card. We're good. And then one person will hop into chat, like, late midstream, and they'll be like, so what is the, how does a deck win? And I'll say, that's a good question.
That's not how you want to answer that question.
I know. And that's something that I've fallen into too. It's just because you get so caught up in the thing that you don't find ways to actually like take it a step further and win, which is why I'm trying to experiment with Vivictus and Zapandril and be more combat focused because that is how you win.
Can I, I don't want to rehash, you know, old drama or anything like that.
Drama.
And by old drama, I mean like from a minute and a half ago.
Okay.
But how does your Primal Surge deck actually win off Primal Surge?
So it does because so Primal Surge will win because I'll Primal Surge and then I'll get Concordant Crossroads out and then I'll swing.
What if you don't though? What if it's already gone?
That
what's your
happen.
Failsafe?
Eternal Witness.
I feel like I have the lamp pointed at you right now.
We're
in the interrogation thing of a police precinct right now.
Well, I don't run like, those, so it's fine.
Where is he?
Yeah.
How do you win the game?
That is a...
How are you getting around all of these triggers? How are you not... It's
not even how are you winning the game. How are you not losing the game? That's
your
the
Batman,
better question.
Your Batman voice is unsettling.
I've had a lot of practice.
Okay, I don't. But like that, I mean, that's even another reason to make cuts to your deck. It essentially is just like maybe something is just very expensive and you're like, God, I'd rather have a cheaper deck or a more budget friendly deck. I mean, Greathenge is what, like guesstimating here off the top of my head,
$50.
Yeah. Which is very expensive, but like $50 can be two other cards in your deck, or it could be the cost of a deck. Let's be honest. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons to cut things. It just kind of depends on like your vibe and your feel and your energy. But like pain points, I think is a good area for that.
I was having a conversation with someone yesterday because they're building a deck, and you know the deck that really inspired them was $3,000. How do I do this when it's $3,000? And I was like, listen here, $2,400 of that is seven cards.
That's depressing.
That deck is really like $500 to $600. And then Gaudi, I just happen to have this sort of cards. And I think that's something that can inspire a lot of changes in a deck or just inspire the deck building in the first place. It's just, I have this card, I'm going to run it, or I have this card and I feel guilty about it sitting in my box. So I'm going to put it in a deck, so that I can feel better about my decisions to have that card.
I think I have two decks that were built off of that concept, which was number one, Sisse. I had a bunch of secret layers rotting in a binder, and I felt guilty about that. And guaranteed, it's an expensive deck, but if you change it to its cheapest printings, the deck isn't that expensive if you like look at the original basis. Same thing with Vivictus. My Vivictus deck, if I did... accurate set printings would be expensive because I have like that $90 brain dead diabolic tutor. Diabolic Tutor is a what, like a 25 cent card, if
not
that.
Even it's not, not even, even worth the it's not even worth the paper that is printed on in most cases.
There you go. But like, you know, I ran it in there simply because I wanted an excuse, because Diabolic Tutor is a card that I find people say, well, is Diabolic Tutor a 2023 card? I've had people say that about a lot of cards I run, but I'm like, well, I wanna, so I did.
I think more often than not, I find myself making changes because I want to run a certain card more than I don't want to run another card. That's just like my personal experience. I think like best practice, it's mm-hmm. the other way around. But I have a brand. I have a way that I like to enjoy the game. And I think everyone has a brand. Everyone has a way that they like to enjoy the game. So editing towards that brand, or editing towards, you know, what's going to bring them the most amount of joy is frankly, at the end of the day, going to be the best decision to do.
We don't have this written down, but I'm going to say it because I'm surprised we didn't.
What
Marie
you got?
Marie Kondoing your deck. It's Marie Kondoing your deck.
That's, yeah.
That is what it is.
My You're brand. Marie,
yeah. It's my you thing. Marie Kondo. You build what brings you joy. You cut what doesn't bring you joy. Is that something that may or may not be optimal? It depends on what that little Marie Kondo inside your chest is telling you.
Mm-hmm. Now, she's like loosened up on her rules as time has gone on. Like ever since the Netflix show, she is like really loosened up. But mm-hmm. I think everyone deserves to kind of loosen up a little bit at the end of the day too. Like you don't have to hold yourself to hard and fast rules.
I feel like it's okay to challenge what other people might tell you to cut. Because yeah. I like to ask people for opinions to cut. Example, like I asked you about like my green deck.
I'm going to tell you something completely different than what Chris is going to tell you to cut. Chris exactly. is going to tell you something completely different than from what Carson's going to tell you to cut.
Yeah. And there was a good example for this is in my Chandra deck. There's a card I run called Repeated Reverberation. And I've had back when I first was like, you know, conceptualizing this deck, and I had this in my little pile of cards. I was asking friends for an idea for it to cut. He said, cut this card. I don't know why you run it. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, Repeated Reverberation, you're not doing Spellslinger. And I said, did you read the second half, which says you copy that loyalty ability twice? And so what is my main win con that I feel like if there's a card I feel like I'm known for, maybe I feel like it's Repeated Reverberation because I really hype that card up because it wins mm-hmm. me games. But that was the card. My win con was what people were telling me to cut, but I didn't cut it. And I refused to because it's so good.
So in a general sense,
what
cards would you typically take out to make changes and add new cards in? I have this like buzzword or buzz phrase that I use that mm-hmm. kind of just has a mm-hmm. different meaning to different people. I like to say that the first cards that you should cut to make changes are the cards where you trim fat, like you're trimming fat from the deck. You know, you're mm-hmm. gaudy, like this card only works if it has this card and this card and this card. Like the cards that need other cards to work for them to work themselves is usually where I start. I don't know where do you start?
So I kind of start in between that area and another. Like it really depends on the deck. So most of the time I'll start at cards that don't bring me joy, but I feel like I have to run, quotes on have mm-hmm. to run. Because like, I want to be able to enjoy my deck. And if I'm playing a card I don't like, or I know this is going to sound weird, but there are cards that make me feel like icky in my chest. I don't know why I feel that way, but like, it makes me go, I don't like it. It doesn't feel right to me. That'll be the card that I want to cut first because it's not fun for me. It may be the best choice, but it's not fun. And also trimming the fat, like you said, I like to actually cut from like the, I guess you could call it the bottom of the deck, but like the highest mana value to kind of like lower my ACMC and make my deck a little bit quicker. I'm doing that in Zapandra right now. I mean, you saw it, but like cutting a lot of like the big things in order to round out your deck is also a good thing that I like to do.
There's this general concept. I forget who ran the numbers like way back when. And I know things have changed a lot. Or you could argue that things have changed a lot recently because mm-hmm. more people are running more ramp and a lot of like the big haymaker, like heavy hitters in the format, mm-hmm. that like actually win you games are just more mana nowadays. But it was something like, on average, you're going to cast a card that's 7 or more mana, like, once a game. Just in general. Like, you're going to cast a 7-drop or more expensive once a game. And, like I said, I think that's changed a lot these days. Yeah. But if you think about the fact that, like, you might only be casting, like, 1-7 or, like, 1-8-drop a game, do you need 13 in your deck? If you're playing a deck like yours, you know, big mono green stompy, a lot of your deck is going to revolve around casting, you know, a couple of those. So that's the exception to the rule.
It's weird because I hear that rule and I think maybe 2 to 3 years ago, that would have been the case.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's the case anymore now. Cause I'm like,
I don't
I'm thinking
either.
About a lot of my decks. But like, for instance, like Elminster, I feel like is a weird exception because he takes like an expropriate and makes it 2 mana. That's different.
You're casting a 9-drop, but you're not actually paying 9 mana for it.
There you go. But I feel like at the same time, a lot of people are able to cast their commanders pretty consistently, you know, especially with commander attacks, you know, 4 mana becomes 6, becomes 8, becomes 10. Pretty consistently, I would say. So I really wouldn't say that.
I think commanders have also just gotten cheaper over the years, too.
I think we're seeing a turnaround on that a little bit.
They're printing a lot of cards that say, hey, run an expensive commander like Majestic Genesis and Imposing Grandeur.
Or Zupandril. He's 7 mana. I run my big boy. He's dummy thick, and I love him for it.
But this idea of trimming fat where in a traditional sense, like you might only be casting a 7 or an 8-drop for full price like once a game, where my fat trimming usually ends up being it's that like 4 and 5-drop slot. Like,
yeah.
I don't remember who, and they were like 6-drops win games. 4 and 5-drops don't. So it's almost like you skip 4 and 5 on your curve. The difference between the impact of a 5-drop and the impact of a 6-drop these days is extreme, and there's only 1 mana difference.
I actually find that really interesting that you say that. I don't know if I would agree about the, you know, 6-drops win games thing. I really don't think that. I feel like that's kind of like a overarching sort of thing. However, every time, and I do mean every time when I deck build and I look at my curve, my 4 is always the highest. I just find that really fascinating because it's 4 very consistently for me.
Yeah.
And when I do cuts on my deck building stream, oftentimes when I find I'm having a very hard time to find cuts, like we feel like the deck is very finely tuned, my chat will ask me to separate cards by mana value, and then we go to the 4s, which I find really interesting.
That's not to discredit the power of the 4-drop or anything like that. Like, you kind of, you know, you got to play a curve. Like, you have to be able to play a card every turn.
Yeah,
if you can help it.
Ideally.
But if you're given the choice between 2 4-drops and an 8-drop, I'm going to play the 8-drop. If I'm given the choice between 2 3-drops and a 6-drop, I'm going to play the 6.
I guess it depends for me. For me, it depends because, like, I don't know. I mean, there's the whole concept. I mean, we could go on for hours about this, talking about redundancy and, you know, like the magical Christmas land.
Everything and stuff like that.
Like, it really depends on the card for me, I would say. Because, like, I have to I weigh mana value and ability very strongly. Because, like, is the cost, you know, worth the payoff for me? And, like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I think it depends. But I find it interesting.
There's a very clear pattern of where your deck gets concentrated in. And like you said, if there's just like a ridiculous extreme amount of 4-drops, you probably have too many there that's just getting too convoluted in your deck. So that's the easiest place to start with your fat trimming. Other like little things that I will look at is how much card draw I have versus how much ramp I have. Mm-hmm. I used to be someone who just run more ramp versus more card draw. But then I realized, well, if I already have 13, 14 mana, I don't need more ramp. And what I need is cards in my hand to cast with that 13 or 14 mana that I already have. Yeah. So I've started to like ease back on the number of ramp pieces that I have in a deck, and I'll add card draw instead mm-hmm. of that. So like I have a very direct edit that I can make mm-hmm. after the fact. It works for me. Granted, I play a lot of green, so it is easier for me to ramp and ramp consistently.
Yes, it is.
If I'm playing a color combination that maybe struggles a little bit more with like get ahead ramp, aka like I'm not playing a white deck or I'm not playing like an artifact blue deck, which I never would. But the need for more ramp is actually there. So having like a more even number maybe helps in that situation. But that ratio is something that I very directly take a look at and leads to a very direct, like easy change. And you can do that to ratchet up a deck. Doing that can also ratchet down a deck as well. Yeah. Because you're technically a little bit slower off the ground with your curve.
Mm.
Which in some cases, like we mentioned, is a good thing to be a little slower because maybe you wanted your deck to be a little bit more chill. Maybe you wanted the deck to just hang out a little bit more and kind of enjoy the scenery.
And I know this is probably very, you know, understandable at this point, but I just want to emphasize it again. Slower does not mean you're not going to win. You know, I still want my opponents to be able to enjoy and play the game. I still want to win. I just, you know, don't want to like, you know, body slam people turn three, because that's not going to make people want to play with me again.
That that Miriam deck that I've been building.
You need to burn that deck with fire.
I cognizantly chose to make the deck a Karuga deck so that it would be like purposefully slower off the ground. Like instead of popping off on like turn three, turn four, it's like turn six, turn seven. But that like extra two turns makes all the difference at a table. And slowing your deck down by like a turn might be all you need to like fit the vibe that you're trying to go for.
I love you with my heart and my soul. That deck is not slow. you showed me that playtest. You even texted me and you went, "Do you want to see something disgusting?" And I said, "Yes." And you're like, "Look at this playtest." And it looked like you glitched out Moxfield. Actual. Oh my God. That's so funny.
24 Niv-Mizzet Perunes,
yes!
10 Ganix Astral Hunters, 100 treasures, like...
So sorry. You're like, it's slower. It's still very scary.
It was.
But to be fair, you were playtesting by yourself, which can also be very different, especially when you're a pod. Playtest with people.
That's actually, like, a very interesting thing to bring up. I would not make edits to a deck until you've played with actual people.
Yes.
There are little things that you can do. There are little things that you can change when you're playtesting for yourself. When I playtest a deck, I don't playtest like unless I'm like trying to like cognizantly learn lines, like unimpeded lines for a deck. I don't playtest past like turn three, turn four.
Yeah.
Just because I just want to see how the deck ramps out. I want to see how it develops like a little bit of card draw. That's it. Yeah. That's the only thing I really think that you can play test by yourself.
Yeah.
So don't make edits until you've played. I'd say 5 or 6 games with actual people.
I would also say like playtesting by yourself or like let's not even call it playtest. Let's gold fishing. When you are gold fishing, you are going to get the ideal experience. Because your opponents are going to be doing their own thing, i.e. not interacting with you. So, like, of course, you're going to pop off on turn 4, 5, 3, whatever have you. But, like, I did that the other day with, like, Zipandril. I was even texting you being like, oh, turn 4 Zipandril, turn 3 Zipandril. And it was really cool. But when I played it in person at my LGS, we were singing a little bit of a different tune. little baby was a little slower, which is fine. But I learned.
It's good. Performance anxiety.
Jesus. He was struggling. He was struggling. But like testing is, I would agree with your concept on like testing. And even then, like there are going to be experiences that you get in one game where you're not going to get in another, which is why I'm glad you said do multiple games, because I have a beautiful example of that actually on my stream. I put this card in my Zapandro deck very randomly. I put an Impervious Great Worm, which is like what is like a 14-14 or like a 10-10 or something for like a million mana. You know, with Convoke. And I put that in there because I'm like big, dumb green creature. Live, laugh, love that for myself. But when I was playing, I couldn't cast it, but I had a Garrick Caller of Beasts on the battlefield. And this was on stream. So I minused Garrick, put that Great Worm on the battlefield. And I was like, wow, this is so sick and awesome. I'm glad I put this card in here.
Hindsight bias.
Exactly. Flash forward to FNM. I draw Impervious Great Worm. There's no Garrick. And I'm not a go wide deck. I am a go kind of, you know, dummy thick, a little bit tall, you know? And so I was like, I don't have the mana to cast this. And it was a dead card in my hand. And I felt really bad. And like in that moment, if you've asked me, Chase, would you cut this card? I would have said no, because I had Garrick to give me that cool thing. But without Garrick, this card is kind of like a little bit of a sad moment for me.
There's something interesting with testing a commander deck just in general. Mm-hmm. It's like if you change like two or three cards, it's a 100-card singleton deck. Like you're not even guaranteed to see those cards. You're not like you might not see those cards for games and games and games and games, if ever. Like that is technically statistically possible to never ever see the changes that you make.
Yeah.
So that's why I say like play multiple games, like play 5, play 10 games with a deck before you decide to make changes, and then play another 5 to 10 games with those changes before you change again.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that this kind of naturally segues into something that I'm incredibly passionate about in terms of like editing, and that's over-engineering changes, because I'm certainly guilty of this all the time. I think everybody's guilty of over-engineering their changes all the time. So this is just like the reality check of deck editing, for lack of a better term. And you brought up this concept of the Ship of Theseus before we started. So I wanted to hear what you were thinking here, because I think it's totally true.
It is. I like to use my Sisso deck as an example of this, but like the Ship of Theseus is like if you take it apart and like you slowly replace it piece by piece, you know, and it gets put back together, is it still the same ship? If you just like take a if essentially
if you,
you
replace
just, like,
all
replace
the boards
the
on the ship,
is it still the same ship? And you know, shout out WandaVision for giving me that dope reference. I would say yes and no, which is, you know, a thing I say often on here. Like, it's still going to be the same, like, whatever commander deck. It's still going to be the same Locust God, Sisay, Zapandrol, you know, Saskia, what have you. But, like, the concept of the deck is not going to be the same, especially if you kind of shift everything. Like, if you ramp it up in power, if you lower it down in power too much, if you change the concept completely, it's going to be a different deck. And I feel like that depends on what you're going for personally, because like if you want to change it, good for you and do that, but I don't think I've really done an over engineering to a certain extent like this.
I think it's interesting because, you know, you say that it's a different deck. I think as long as that like core concept, the thing that you the reason why you wanted to build that deck in the first place, I think if that's still intact, it's still the same deck. Whether it's changed power levels up, down, left, right, whatever, what have you, like even if you've changed the commander just entirely, if it's still deep down sticking to the roots of why you wanted to build the deck in the first place, I still think it's the same deck. That's it's just fair. The way that it's presenting itself is different.
Getting all philosophical here. Bringing out, I don't have a philosophy degree, but we're bringing out.
My liberal arts education.
I have liberal arts education. Let's
finally
Socratic seminar,
off.
Baby. Socratic. But like, I suppose it's a really fair way to put it. Like if I change my Locust God deck to like a Nekusar deck, like I'm still doing wheels, I suppose.
Funny you bring up a Grixis commander. Last week we were talking about Bellicor versus like Rakdos for demons. It's still a demon deck. It's just a demon deck with blue in it now. I do think that there is a line that you can cross where you change it too much, where it is no longer that same ship, where you have over-engineered changes so that the deck is irrecognizable, the deck is not what you were going for, or the changes change the vibe completely. If I wanted to ratchet up a deck a little bit, add in my Worldly Tutor, add in my, you know, Selvala combo, what have you. If I add those in and they take it too far, well, I've technically over-engineered my changes. You know, same thing going the other way, removing that kind of stuff, and then it's not powerful enough to play at the tables that I want it to play at. You know, it is possible to do stuff like that. But I also think just over-engineering a change is just blanketly, it's a change, it's too much change in a direction that you didn't want to go in. Or it's overcorrecting a problem.
If I may, I think this might kind of connect to it, because like you've talked to me before about doing this, and I had asked you about doing this, and you told me you think I couldn't handle it, which I agree. But you said that, you know, there was a moment where you were having an experience where you feel like you kind of changed things too much with one of your decks. I don't remember which deck it was, but you told me
most of them.
You were just. Yeah, you told me there was a solid week period where you were like, I'm taking everything apart and I'm starting from scratch. And that's what you
did.
Burn
it down.
You did. You literally, and I was like, ooh, should I do it? And you were literally like, dude, I don't know if you could do this.
I don't know if you can handle the emotional weight of burning down all of your babies.
No, I don't think I could. But I think that was a very good way for you to handle that, because you're still able to restart fresh and kind of come back to your starting concept and your starting vibe with the deck that you wanted, and just from scratch, I think is a good way to do that.
I've been doing it for a very, very long time, like ever since I started playing Commander. But I think this concept of burning it all down as a way to just either A, start fresh, but B, have a reality check on over-engineering your problems was really popularized by Dan Sheehan.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I remember you texted me that tweet that Dan posted, and you're like, I think I'm going to do this. And I was like, good luck.
I do it around then anyways, but I think Dan just like got that fire going in me a little bit more vigorously than usual, which... just another reason why I love Dan. Like, Dan's an amazing person. But it is a very good thing. And a lot of times you don't know if you're over-engineering a problem until it's too late. An example that I will give my Primal Surge deck. I know you're trying to like work away from this, but this actually hammers home the concept of you not wanting to do a combo Primal Surge. And this is part of why. A big part of my Primal Surge deck was I had problems protecting it. I had problems protecting my wins. So what do you do when you can't run Heroic Intervention? You put in everything that says your opponents can't do stuff. You know, you go out of your way to add the Dromokas. You go out of your way to add the Morel. You go out of your way to add the Linvala, everything like that. Your Gerard... Glorious Protector, just all of those cards that say you can't do anything, or if you try to do something, nothing happens to me. Well, 13 cards later, I'm playing and I was like, I can't do anything. why am I gonna play a Glorious Protector into just like this regular board? This isn't doing anything for me. It's like I went 10 cards too deep. Like I was like, this is a big problem. But I overestimated how big of a problem it actually was. In reality, like when you have Birthing Pod, when you have Yisan and stuff like that, you only need like two cards, because you're always going to be able to find them. Like if your game is going even remotely okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot different when you don't have tutors.deck. But even then, like it's okay for things to go wrong. It's okay for your board to get wiped. Like you don't need nothing to ever happen to you at all times.
Yeah. You don't want to play solitaire, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what basically. You were doing. Well, I think you were just kind of catastrophizing a little bit, because you wanted to protect your deck so much that you were like, okay, it's time to prepare for every single scenario. But if you prepare for every single scenario, then you lose the original concept of your deck, because you have to make room for all of that preparation, and suddenly you're running 30% less of what you wanted to do.
Once I did dial it back beyond that, like, I love the deck. It is actually one of the few decks that I think is done. There's very little that will or could go in there that improves it.
It's done for now.
There's more to just editing a deck when you, like, fall out of love with it, when you find a problem with it. It's, you know, this idea of editing a deck when there's new cards that are printed. Like, how often do you go and edit a deck that, you know, you see new cards printed for? And I know we, like, kind of touched on this at the beginning of the show, but I think it's a good thing to end on.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people out there who edit every single deck every single time a new set comes out. And I'm not one of those people.
I'm not either. I don't tend to do that. Because here's the deal. The perfect card could be released. Let's say in March of the Machines, there's a perfect card released for Locust God. If I don't like it as much as the other cards in Locust God, I don't care how good it is. I'm not going to run it. I only want to run things that I like. So I will edit a deck if there's something I like more that is previewed. Or maybe I discover an old card that I didn't know existed that combos with a new card that I like more. Then I'll run it. But that's kind of how I do it.
You know, it's this concept of, like, the time capsule of a deck. If I see a new card that I just, like, really, really, really enjoy, really vibe with, chances are, as opposed to putting it into an old deck of mine, and I know this comes from a place of privilege, I'm just probably going to build a new deck with that new card. And then if I really, 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 really like it in that deck, I'll go back and I'll add it to the old deck. I'm kind of going through that right now with Gwenna from Brothers War. They're like three mana mana dork that you can only use for creature and, like, creature abilities. Like, it's the perfect Primal Surge card.
That's a great card. I know what card you're talking about.
Yeah, but I don't know what I would cut for it. So I'm just not going to deal with it. And I'm going to move on with my life as if nothing's happening. But I'm building some other decks, and I've put Gwenna in those decks.
Yeah.
And then if I really, really like Gwenna in those decks, then I'm gonna sit down and spend the hour and a half finding one cut for them in Primal Surge.
It's not the end of the world if you can't find space for a card. You know, you have plenty of time to edit your decks and change your decks, and maybe
they're not going anywhere.
Exactly. Or maybe, like you said, maybe it has a home in a different deck, or maybe it has a home being its own commander. You never know until you test it out and try it. I think that's kind of like a good way to look at it. You know, like, don't pressure yourself to achieve this kind of, like, goalpost that you've set out for yourself. You're fine. Take your time. Don't stress about it. Cutting cards is supposed to be fun, I heard.
It's fun after the fact. It's not fun in the moment.
Yes,
which
is
why I just don't do it. I think it's really, really interesting. I was talking to Jim probably like a month and a half ago. Jim built this Council of Four deck, and he's just like, "Yeah, I had 105 cards. I couldn't figure out what to cut, so I'm just running 105 cards."
I love that for him.
I was like, the good old Dragon Shield special.
Yep,
because they always come with a couple extra sleeves in the package. And you just sleeve everything up. And you're just like, basically.
I love, like, that.
Nothing stopping you from doing that. Like,
nope.
I would probably bring it up at the beginning of the game. Like, hey, like, I got a couple extra cards in here. I'm just trying to figure out, like, what to run. This is the list. These are the cards that I'm, like, keeping an eye on. You just bring it up with your playgroup. Like, hey, can you help me figure out, like, what you like in this deck out of this list of cards if it comes up? That way you have, like, a little bit more brain power going into your changes. Like, run those 105 cards. Run the Dragon Shield special. Or your 102.
I love that. That's great.
Nothing stopping you.
Yeah.
It also makes editing your decks easier.
Truly, yeah, it does, actually. I'm going to actually start doing that, actually. I find myself having difficulties cutting cards. I should just do that. That's cool. I dig it.
Say something, obviously, but
of course.
Just do it. Like, yeah, it's I'm not going to stop you.
It's recommended, you know, 99 with a commander is 100. It's recommended.
Yeah. We're playing a loose commander-like structure. Obviously, like, I would like end up cutting those cards eventually. Like don't run the Dragon Shield special constantly.
Yeah.
But if you're like, if you're still just like trying to figure out some edits, trying to figure out some tasks, everything, like, then just do it.
Yeah.
I think it's completely fine.
Thank you so much for watching this week's episode of Bad at Magic. If you don't know who I am, my name is Chase, also known as Mana Curves. I'm a Commander content creator, streaming Paper Commander, and deck building on my Twitch channel, Mana Curves. And you can also find me writing articles about Commander for Star City Games.
And I'm at EK Plays Cards on all of the things. I work behind the scenes with most of your favorite content creators. So if you're supporting them, you're also supporting me. You can support this podcast by leaving a like, leaving a comment, all that kind of stuff, like a review if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast. But did you know that there's a YouTube version of this podcast too? So subscribe to the YouTube channel, all that kind of stuff. Feed the algorithm, give us those good brain chemicals, because it really does help out the show. And we will see you next week.